Hollis created Transform Boundaries, an organization dedicated to helping schools create programs and creative solutions for reaching their complex learners. She served as the Director of Academic Intervention at Explore Charter School and co-created the Carmel Alternative High School for at-risk teens. Hollis also worked as a learning specialist at the Student Success Center of All Kinds of Minds, and she is currently a coach, mentor, and workshop facilitator for Hidden Sparks. So Hollis, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Sarah. I'm having a, there we go. So welcome everybody. I'm so glad you're here. You know, it's funny, I was reflecting before this session began about the topic of this workshop, and I thought it was very interesting that I was teaching about teaching vocabulary, because when I was a child, I had a very hard time coming up with the words that I needed to say. And it was the first time I actually made that connection. So I'm glad that I'm going to be able to help all of you help your students who might be struggling with coming up with the words that they want to say. So the objectives of this workshop is that you'll be able to identify why it's important to provide vocabulary instruction, identify the components of effective vocabulary instruction, and you'll walk away with a lot of strategies that you could use tomorrow. The way the session's gonna go is we're gonna do a little glimpse on vocabulary research. Then we're gonna talk about the components of effective vocabulary instruction. And then we'll spend most of our time with vocabulary instructional tools that follow those components of how to be effective when you're teaching vocabulary. So what does the research say? Now, this is a tiny little glimpse of a huge body of research. So researchers have shown that reading comprehension difficulties are in a large part due to the students' challenges in understanding the academic language of school texts. And vocabulary and syntactical knowledge have been shown to account for the majority of individual differences in reading comprehension performance for students in upper and elementary school through high school. A typical child requires on average 10 attentive encounters with a word before they actually own it. Students who receive training about morphology, which we're going to look at a little bit deeper later, so you'll learn more about it, and phonemic shifts like nation versus national, improve significantly more in reading and spelling than those who just received phonics instruction. By middle school, if students are to make grade level progress, this is really interesting, they should be exposed to 3,000 to 5,000 new words a year. They need to read at least 1.1 million words a year of outside reading, which is 25 to 35 books, and read about 1.7 million words in school texts on top of that. Now, we know a lot of our students don't get that much word exposure, which is why it's so important to actually teach vocabulary. So why do we need to teach it? Because some people think, well, they'll just pick it up as we go. But it's important to actually teach it because there are measurable gains in student understanding of words by teaching it. There's a knowledge of what is read in the text improves, so we're going to build their academic skills on a larger scale. Students who do little independent reading are exposed to significantly less words per year than students who read often. And we know we have a variety of students in our classrooms, and some of them are exposed to more reading than others. So by actually teaching vocabulary in the classroom, you're helping level the playing field. It fosters a word conscious attitude where students begin to think about words and parts of words and meaning of words. And it's essential for our ELL students who lack a basic vocabulary in English. Learning is fundamentally and profoundly dependent on vocabulary knowledge. And the research has shown that it actually impacts future income. So by teaching vocabulary, you're helping your students to have a brighter future. So before I talk about effective vocabulary instruction, I want to talk about the most ineffective vocabulary instruction. So I go into a lot of classrooms in my work, and there are so many times that I see this type of vocabulary instruction happening in classrooms, which is why I want to bring your attention to it, because it has been scientifically proven to be the most ineffective way. And that way is rote memorization of words and definitions as an instructional method. It has the least results of long-term effect. So the look up the word in the dictionary and write a sentence method is often ineffective, because if you think about it, when you look in a dictionary, it has multiple definitions that to a child is often daunting. Well, which definition is it? And a lot of times, unless it's a children's dictionary, those definitions don't make any sense. The other thing is sometimes definitions don't really give you much information about the meaning. For example, if you looked up the word unremittable, the definition would say unable to be remitted. But if you don't know what remitted means, that's not going to help you understand what the meaning of the word is. Matching meanings and definitions on a weekly test does not constitute a thorough knowledge of any word. So I would imagine that you can remember yourself, or you see this in your students, that when they might get 100 on their test and have matched the correct word to the correct definition, but then when they're reading or writing, you notice that they really don't understand the meaning of that word. If the only exposure to words we are teaching is in the dictionary, we are actually limiting our students, right? Because in the previous slide, we saw that it actually impacts future income. So if we're not helping them really build their vocabulary in a rich and deep way, we're holding them back. So when we think about effective vocabulary instruction, one of the things we need to think about is what words are we teaching them? How do we choose the words that we're going to focus on? Because obviously, we saw that the amount of words that children need to be exposed to, we can't teach every single vocabulary word. We don't have time to do that. We have so many other things that we need to cover in our curriculum. So how do you pick and choose which words to cover? So effective vocabulary instruction wants to focus on tier two words. So here we have the levels. Tier one are basic words. They're high frequency, they're used all the time, but they're very basic. They don't require a lot of in-depth knowledge, and they're words that children have been exposed to on a regular basis that they probably know already. Tier two words are high utility, meaning they are used a lot, especially in academic, you know, in books and content area subjects. And they're also they're used a lot, and they're more sophisticated. For example, industrious, solution, reluctant, fortunate. And tier three words are specialized knowledge. They're not used very often. They're more used in specific content or business areas, isotope, lathe, polyester. Those are things you might, you know, the children are not going to necessarily have a lot of exposure to or need to know as much. Certainly if you're teaching a science class, you want them to know scientific words. But when you're focusing on what to teach, you want to stick in the tier two level. So let's take a look at what those tier two words have. So they have characteristic of a mature language user. So you can teach words to even kindergarten students that are more sophisticated than they might use on a daily basis, because you want them to have exposure and understanding of higher level words, even at a young age. You want to have connections to other words and concepts. So these are words that you want to make sure have connections to other words and are not a word that you might see somewhere out there in the middle of nowhere, because by them understanding that word, they're going to be able to understand and make connections to the other words. You want it to have the biggest bang for its buck, because you can't teach every word. So if this word is connected to five other words and they don't know those five other words, if they know that one word, it might help them understand those five other words. And we're going to get into some details of that in a little bit. It also provides precision and specificity. So if you were to say, so picture in your mind, take a moment to visualize. As we know, comprehension often requires visualization. So if you can visualize, because not everybody can, so if you can't, don't worry about it, just imagine. Picture somebody who's eating something. What does that look like in your mind? Okay, now picture somebody devouring something. What does that look like in your mind? Both words mean to consume food, but one has a very different feeling to it than another. So that's what we mean by precision and specificity. So we sophisticated words, nice versus generous, strong versus robust, plain versus unadorned. We want to work on those sophisticated words. And then the appropriate precise words, and I gave an example of eat and devour, but like watch and scrutinize. You can see the difference in those two words and what, how that changes the feeling of what you're saying or hearing. So what is effective vocabulary instruction? New vocabulary should be encountered repeatedly in context throughout reading and listening. So not in isolation. You want to make sure that vocabulary words that you're teaching are introduced in context. So it could be in a book that you're reading, if you're an older, if you're teaching older students, it could be in one of their textbooks or novels. If it's a younger group of children that you're teaching, it could be in one of their picture books, which I'm going to demonstrate in a little bit. New vocabulary should be linked to students' prior knowledge. So you want to make sure they're making connections with what they already know. And new vocabulary should be connected with other words that are semantically related. And we're going to get into that later. You want to teach across the curriculum. So if you're a pre-K to five teacher, depending if fifth grade is decompartmentalized, but if you're in the classroom all day teaching, you know, all general studies subjects or even in Judaic studies subjects as well. You want to, if you're introducing new terms, new words, you want to make sure you're kind of using those words in all the different areas of your subject area. Well, it's subject area, Judaic studies in all the different realms, and in general studies in all the different subject areas. So deep processing of a word's meaning happens best when students are actively engaged in learning. Now that's true, in my opinion, about any kind of learning. Any kind of information needs to be learned in an active environment, but it's especially true with vocabulary. And we're going to have a lot of examples of how you can actively engage your students to learn vocabulary. Using video clips and visuals helps to reinforce the content area instruction. And we've all heard that expression, a picture is worth a thousand words. So if you show, you know, if somebody doesn't know what an iceberg is, you could describe it to them with words. But if you showed them a picture, that would give them an instant impact of understanding. Because students encounter many words that they need to learn, but can't be explicitly taught due to time constraints, you need to remember that students will incorporate the words that teachers use frequently in the classroom. So you want to try to up your game as far as what vocabulary you use in the classroom. And you want to encourage, they need to be encouraged to be aware of and interested in words so that they develop ownership over them. So some quick ideas, and this is like the brushstroke. And then we're going to go deep into it, I promise, so that you'll walk away with some specific strategies. But you could act out words in charades. So if the word that they're acting out would be a vocabulary word, the fact that they have to think about how do I need to move and act in order to demonstrate the meaning of this word to another group, and that other group is trying to guess, that's going to really deepen their understanding of the terminology, the words, the vocabulary. You definitely want to connect words to students' lives and prior learning. We mentioned that before. You can do individual dictionaries. Now, this is different than somebody looking something up in a dictionary that somebody else wrote. This is more creating a child's own dictionary, where as they learn new words, it would have to be like a binder where they could put papers in. So it could be in alphabetical order. There could be alphabet tabs. And as they learn new words, it goes into their binder so that if they ever forget a word, they can look it up in their own dictionary. Interactive word walls are really effective in helping build vocabulary. And you're going to learn about that in a little while. Making associations with words, having the students explain, you want to explain words with stories. to make it more meaningful. You want to make analogies so that they can understand the new word in relation to an old word that they might know, and compare and contrast words. Some more quick ideas is you want to repeat words in varied contexts, right? So you want to use the word in different, we talked about subject areas, but also sometimes words are used in a different way. So it's important to teach those different contexts. You want to give definitions and paraphrase the definitions. You want to substitute other words in the place in a sentence to show how different words can be used for the same idea. Identify other forms of the word, like we looked at nation and national, nationality. Identify synonyms and antonyms to help them kind of understand the concept of the word. Classify and sort words. Identify nuances and connotations of words. And we did that like with eat and devour. So those are kind of like the brushstroke, the big ideas. So let's get into the specific strategies.
Alice, I just wanted to ask a question. Somebody asked, do you feel that anchor charts are helpful with vocabulary?
I think anchor charts are helpful with almost everything, but I'm not sure exactly what type of anchor chart they're referring to. So if you're talking about an anchor chart that has like a vocabulary word and the definition, then I would say maybe not, because that's the same idea as like looking something up in the dictionary. But if you're talking about an anchor chart that looks at morphology, like prefixes and suffixes and root words and how what the meanings of those are, so you have a list of prefixes with the meanings as an anchor chart for them to look at. So when they come to a multisyllabic word, they can say, okay, well, this has anti in the front. Let me look on my anchor chart and see what anti means. Oh, that's what this word means. That could be really helpful.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Yeah. So this is a framework for teaching vocabulary where they contextualize the word, meaning you're looking at the word in the context of the sentence or the text that it's in. You explain the meaning versus just giving a definition. The students repeat the word. The teacher gives examples. The student gives examples, and then the student repeats the word. Now, I found an amazing resource. It's a Utah State Office of Education that provides, I don't know, I don't remember if it's 50 or 100 of these lesson plans using this research-based method called Text Talk, which very much follows the framework from the previous slide. So I want to kind of do an example of this. I'm not going to do a full example because it would take too much time, but I'm going to give you examples as we go through the bullets. So first you choose a book to read. Now this resource that we'll send you, I just realized I didn't have it in the PowerPoint, Sarah, but Sarah will send you or have it available, the link, has it, these lessons are based on common books. So you probably have some of these books in your classroom already. I chose the book, A Bad Case of Stripes. So you choose the book, you read it aloud, just like you would in any read aloud. You choose three tier two words to explicitly teach from the book. And then you read the book out loud, just with the focus on comprehension like you normally would. And then you go back to the page that holds the first chosen tier two word, and you read it in context. So the word here that I've chosen is contagious. And I'm gonna say, I've been getting calls from the other parents. They're afraid those stripes may be contagious. And then I give the definition. Contagious means yet you have some sort of illness that's contagious that somebody else can catch, which right now, as I'm saying this, is very currently appropriate. Then you have the students repeat the pronunciation of the word. So then I would say, so the word is contagious. What's the word? And hopefully you're saying contagious on your end of the webinar. And then I would give an example. So chicken pox are very contagious. When my daughter went to play with her friend who had the chicken pox, She came down with them within a week. Have students give their examples with a sentence starter. So you might say to them, okay, I want you to finish this sentence. One time I was contagious when, or something I know that's contagious is. Or you might even say something like, a smile is contagious. When I see someone smile, it makes me smile. So now you're expanding their understanding of the word, and you can say, can you think of anything else other than an illness that could be contagious? Then you want to ask, what's the word that we're talking about, and have the students say contagious, and then you're going to introduce the other words. Then you want to go deeper. You want to have the children make a choice between two of the words. So if my dog was missing, would I be contagious or fretting? Fretting was one of my other words. And they would have to choose between those two words, which is going to help with that meaning and understanding. And it's also going to give you a sense of whether they understand the word. You want them to give examples and explanations. We're not saying definitions, we're saying examples and explanations, and have them connect the word to their life experience. So you could say, have you ever been contagious? What happened? And then you want to assess their understanding by having them choose from a few examples. For example, who would be contagious? Someone who comes to school with a cold, or someone who studies really hard? Now, this is just a little taste of what the text talk lessons have. So that was kind of a little example of how you would teach some tier two words from a storybook. And really, I hope you're getting a sense of how much that deepens the understanding of the meaning of the word. Here's another example at a little bit of an older level. The words debate, defend, and fallacy are pretty sophisticated words, and they have multiple meanings, and sometimes it's hard to differentiate between these words. So you're going to have the students have a conversation about this by, have you ever debated an issue with a classmate or friend? Explain the issue and describe what each of you said. So they not only have to answer, yes, I've debated an issue, but they actually have to go into an explanation of what that debate was, because that's going to help them with their comprehension of that word. Have you ever had to defend an argument you made? Describe the argument and how you defended it. Have you ever identified a fallacy in someone's argument? Describe the argument made and the fallacy you identified. So just imagine if you had students in a group or paired having a discussion like this. When they walked away from that discussion, they would have a deeper sense and really understand what these words mean and the differences between them. So now we're talking about graphic organizers, and this Frayer model is one that has been well researched as effective for teaching vocabulary. So you put the term in the center. You want to pick a tier two word. You have the definition, but it would be a kid-friendly definition, or a definition that the students came up with based on what you've already taught them about the word. Then they would identify the characteristics of that word, features that help students recognize, identify, or distinguish the term. Then you would have them put examples of the term and non-examples. What's interesting is this examples and non-examples seems to be extremely important in helping students really get a deeper understanding of the words. Now, earlier I mentioned a personal dictionary. What I like to do is I like to have students fill out, like, obviously we're talking about upper elementary, middle school, high school. I'm going to show you one for younger students as well. Fill this out, and then they can create their own personal dictionary with these sheets. So when they're looking up the word to remember what it means, they have the entire picture of it, not just the term and the definition. So here's an example of for a younger student, where you have the term you would write in the bubble, and then the definition, they draw a picture of it. What are the characteristics? What are some examples? In the same light, here's a four-square vocabulary. which is just a box with four. You have the word, examples, definition, non-examples. It's the same idea. And this was created by a friend of mine. It's called the slur strategy, where you think about the word and you write the word in the definition. And then you think about, what does this word sound like? What does it look like? What does it remind me of? And by making a connection to those pieces, it's going to help you remember the word. So I have a picture here of, I don't know, for those of you that are old enough, that are my age, you might remember a commercial for Imperial Butter, where they would, or margarine, where they would take a bite of the bread with the margarine on it, and then they would get a crown on, and they would say, oh, it's, you know, fit for a king or something to that effect. So that's what my connection. And since that has to do with being a monarch and a king and somebody who reigns over somebody else, that's going to help me remember what this word means. Now, let's say you don't have all these fancy graphic organizers and you can't remember what they were to draw them for your students. You can just do an easy Venn diagram with antonyms, synonyms, the word in the center, and the definition at the bottom, or a sentence in the bottom. Now we're talking about classifying and categorizing words as a way to help build meaning. So here you can see there's a visual with pictures, and then you have the words that go with it, right? So the type of ecosystem, and you have to, and you can play games with it, like, okay, let's, you know, we have different cards for different ecosystems, and we're going to play a game where we determine which ecosystem this card is for. Or you can match the card with the picture. There's lots of different things that you could do with this type of categorizing. Another strategy I really like is the ABC chart, which is where you pick a topic. So here we have desert. We're staying consistent with the previous slide. And you think of as many words in each, you think of a word at each, for each letter, that describes or explains or somehow just is related to the topic. So I would have students start filling this out on their own. And when they feel like they've done as much as they can, then they start milling around the room to find out their missing pieces. So if I couldn't think of a word that started with a W, I would go around and ask students what they got, what my friends, my peers, what they got for W, and then I can fill that in. So this helps expand my understanding of a desert. So we're in the topic of categorizing and sorting. So here's a way to really understand humans, felines, and equines, and what's similar and different about them. And this is a student example where they're learning about shelters and the different terms that shelters are called. And so they drew this map. With all the social emotional learning that we're needing to incorporate into our teaching right now, especially, I mean, I think it should always be part of our teaching, but now especially it's so important. This is really a nice way to help with the vocabulary of emotions. So we have a bunch of emotions on the left side, and then we have different situations, and we have to determine, would I feel happy in any of these situations? Winning a ball game, having an argument, going on a school trip. Well, I might be happy in a number of those examples. Then you could also talk about excited or elated, right? Like, and you can start to talk about, well, sometimes you can have different emotions in the same situation. So just because one person is happy to go on a school trip, somebody else might be afraid. And so it also helps to build compassion and empathy. And it also helps with flexible thinking to realize that it's not always just one answer when it comes to emotions. So context clues are really important, right? Because when we have students reading and they don't know what a vocabulary word is, we don't want them to get stuck. So I really like this method for helping them understand how to use context clues. So you put the word that you don't know in the left column, and in the next column, you decide what you think that word means before you continue reading. Then you continue reading and you see if your definition has changed, and then what context clues you use to change your definition. And then you think about, and here's kind of like a reflecting metacognitive part where you start to compare your two definitions. How are they the same? How are they different? Are they anywhere near each other? So another thing we talk about in effective vocabulary instruction is specificity. So here you can see that there were three words, gigantic, huge, and large, and they had to put them in the order that they go with some explanation or an example in each one. So we have large, the elephant was large, huge, the whale is huge, gigantic, the Titanic was gigantic. So this obviously is a student's example, because I'm not sure if the Titanic and whales, I don't know the size difference there, but it's interesting. They really have to think about it. And then in the middle, they say huge is smaller than gigantic, large is smaller than huge. So you can see how, even though these words mean similar things, they're really having to think about the differences between these words. And then when they use words, they're going to be more specific. So here's an example of a word ladder. And you can see at the bottom, it says enormous, then large, then hefty, then average, then small, then little, then petite, then microscopic. So there's all sorts of activities that you can do. So you can give a word bank and have them order the words in descending or ascending order. And you can have them, this is a great thing to have them do in groups, because they have to defend themselves, right? So, no, I think little goes next. Well, why do you think little? I think little goes next because whatever their answer is. So this helps them to have to think about and discuss why they're putting certain words in certain places. So now it's going to be your turn to try this activity. So here's five words. I'd like you in the chat box to put these words in order. It doesn't matter if you're going one way or the other, but in the order of degrees that you think it should go. So this is a chance for you to let me know that you're out there. Make sure that you great. Try to put it in the chat versus the question and answer box.
They're rolling in.
Yep, they're rolling in. It looks like many people have put the same order. Some people have put a little bit of different order, which is interesting. So if you were in my classroom, I'd have you talk about why you chose a certain order and have a discussion about it. So that helps to I'm trying to think of the word and I'm having a hard time.
Like concretize it? Is that be the word?
That wasn't what I was thinking, but that could be it. Yeah, it's kind of make it, once you start discussing it and thinking about it in that way, it really helps it gel in your mind. Thank you for your participation. I appreciate it. Okay. Now, some of the ways I like to do this is I like to go to the hardware store and get those paint samples that go in, it's the same kind of color scheme or tone of color, but it goes from like light to dark, as you can see here. And then you can give them some words and then they can put them in order that they think it goes. Then you really hold them accountable. So when they're writing, Once you do these kinds of activities and you're building their vocabulary and their specificity, when they use the word nice, you can really call them on it and say, wait a minute, nice. And also I would have no tolerance policy. No, there's a cute saying for it, no excuse words, where you have a poster where you put any words that they're not allowed to use, like good, nice, those kind of very tier one words, because as you're teaching vocabulary, they should be good. Somebody said that nice is banned in her classroom or his classroom, her classroom. Yes, exactly. So Kay Garnett was a wonderful professor at Hunter College, and this is her game that she created. So I want to give her credit for it. It's called Excuse Me is the game. And what it provides is out loud verbal rehearsal of language, repeated encounters with a targeted term in multiple different sentences, kid-friendly definitions, drawings, illustrations, graphic, and explicit pointing to word relationships, synonyms, antonyms, and categories. So we're going to take a little bit of a zoomed in look. So you would have target cards. So meteor is the example that we give. But let's say you'll have five different target cards. Then you have family cards. So you'll have six family cards. So if we look at these family cards, we have a piece of rock or metal that burns up when it enters the Earth's atmosphere. That's the definition. Then we have, sometimes I'm called a shooting star, but my scientific name is a, and I'll just read one more. Then you can have a drawing of a shooting star. There's a photo of a shooting star. And a blank burns brightly in the skies. It rubs against the air around the Earth. So you can see there's lots of different ways that you're using the term. And then this is how you play the game. And I'm not going to read all of this. I'm just going to give you a little idea. So you put your target cards up, face up in the center, and your family cards all shuffled together in a pile. The person picks a card. They read it out loud. Then they choose which target card it goes with, and they put it underneath the target card. So, and they take the target card to their pile. So then the next person goes and picks a family card. Now, if they pick a family card that goes on the pile that somebody else has, they get to steal the pile. And they have to say, excuse me, may I have the meteor pile? So they have to also learn manners and how to communicate in a nice way. So it's a really fun game. When I do a workshop in person, we play the game, but you can easily make this for whatever terminologies and you are teaching. And you can see that it lends itself for content area like science and social studies.
Now I'm wondering, Hollis, you could even have the kids make the family cards, right?
Yes.
As like an assignment and then play collaboratively.
Definitely. You probably just want to make sure you read through them first to make
right.
Sure. Yeah. But yes, I think that's a great part of the process, because they do say that kids who create their own tests or create their own questions, it helps with the memory and learning of the content. This is a really nice idea, is that you have word reps and you choose two words for each week. And you choose two students each week to be your word reps, and they each get one word. And then they have to learn as much as they can about those words and share the methods that they used. And then they have to present it to the class, right? And they can use pictures, rhymes, they can act it out, they can sing. But I love that idea, because if you do that every week, just to think about how many more words the students are gonna learn, and they probably love being in that role. So the next topic is interactive word walls, which is different than regular word walls. So the characteristics of an interactive word wall is that they resemble graphic organizers. So here's an example of like a column, you know, a graphic organizer that has certain topics in each column. And here we have a T-chart kind of graphic organizer. And what you would have the students do is you would have them fill out the graphic organizer first, and it can also be a data table. You want to strategically, I know I didn't finish my sentence, but I will in a moment. You want to strategically target academic vocabulary. And here we go. And once they've filled out the graphic organizer or the data table, then they go up and they actually create the word wall themselves. And so they're interacting with it and they're talking about it and they're, you know, saying, well, do you think this should go here or should this go here? Wait a minute, I don't think that should go there. Well, why don't you think that should go there? And there's a discussion about it, and this is how learning happens. Another way to make a word wall interactive is to play this mind reader activity. This could be a weekly fun game that could take 5 minutes that the kids will love, and it helps them to really think about words in a different way. So you could say, okay, everybody, it's time for you to become mind readers. Okay, I'm thinking of a word that's on our word wall. So you don't have to write this in the chat yet. So on a separate piece of paper, I want you to think about, tune into my mind and think about what word I'm thinking of and write it in space number one. I'll give you a chance to write it down. Okay, now I'm gonna give you some hints. So the word I'm thinking of is a teaching method. Write down in number two, what word you think it is now. In order to do this, here's hint number three. In order to do this teaching method, you need to be happy. You need flexible thinking in order to use this appropriately. So write down what you think the word is now. It could be the same word. It could be the same word that you thought in number one and you're still going, yeah, that's it. Yep, that describes it. Or it could be a completely different word. Okay, next hint. This word that I'm thinking of has more than two syllables in the word. See if your guess in number three has more than two syllables. If it doesn't, write down a different word. And finally, you use this method to reach the variety of learners in your classroom. So in the chat box, please write what word you ended up with a number five. Yep. Good. So you can see how by playing this game, first of all, it will be fun, but it also collaborative learning. I can accept that answer as well, because that is going to be a way that can help reach all your learners. So you can see how this helps you think about the words and the meaning more deeply. Now, here are some word wall examples that are not interactive word walls, but they were so unique, I just wanted to share them for ideas. So you have a new meaning to look up that word because the word wall is on the ceiling. So I know that some people teach in very small spaces, and this is a way to get your word wall up, literally. Then we have the word wall retirement home. So as words are learned, they can go into the retirement home. We have the traveling word wall, another space-saving device, and it also can be very relevant. You can see there are pockets so that it can be adaptive and current. And then I just really liked the hallway word wall. It was very dynamic. So now, if you remember way back 45 minutes ago when we were talking about the research, and they talked about those that studied morphology, morphemes are the smallest unit of meaning within a word. So for example, prefixes and suffixes and root words are morphemes because it's a chunk that has meaning. And when you change that chunk, you change the meaning of the word. So the research showed that those that studied morphology actually improve their reading comprehension more than just learning phonics. So you can see it allows you to understand words that you've never encountered before and to judge that words are impossible. So if there was a word that didn't make sense because you knew what morphemes are and how words are constructed, then you could say that's not a real word. It also helps you to create new words. So you can see you have the morpheme. A free root is one that makes a word in and of itself. And a bound one is one that is part of a bigger word. And suffixes go at the end of word and changes the meaning. Prefixes go at the beginning of the word and change the meaning. And an infix is something you stick in the middle of the word and it changes the meaning. So when you're teaching morphology, you want to look for roots, prefixes, and suffixes that will add to the student's knowledge of words. So there are so many different prefixes, suffixes, et cetera. So it's kind of like when you choose the tiered words. When you're teaching morphology, once again, time is so precious. You want to focus on the ones that are most commonly used. You can use them across content areas, and you can have them on word walls or personal dictionary. So this kind of addresses that question of that the person asked about, an anchor chart. This is a program, MegaWords, that I use when I teach multisyllabic words. I'm not affiliated with them at all, but it's an example. Rewards is another really good program for teaching multisyllabic words and morphology. So here we go. When you learn one root, so the word, the root struct means to build. Type into the chat box words that you can think of that have the root struct in it, but read what others have written so that you're not repeating words. We have construct, instruction, construct, destruct, structure, lots of structure, destruct, deconstruct, excellent, instruct. Yeah, you know, I never really thought of that instruction had struct in it, but it's like building knowledge. Reconstruct, reconstruction. Okay, you get the hang of it. So let's see how many words there are that actually have that root word in it. Look at that, 94 words have the root struct in it. So by learning that root and some prefixes and suffixes, you could expand your vocabulary by 94 words. Pretty amazing. Here's an example of some common prefixes, suffixes, and roots. So this could be an example of an anchor chart that could be in your room. Here's an activity you can do with partners or groups where you have group one or partner one read the example, partner two read the meaning, and then the two of them together read column three where it's used in a context out loud together. And then we have morph mates. So you take a root on one card, and then on another card, you have the students write different morph mates on it. So we have wondering, wonderful, wondered. And then we have the root amble, and we have the morph mates ambling, ambled, ambulating, ambulance. And then we have it put into context. You are wondering how much longer until lunch, or after my surgery, ambulating around the house was hard. So these are cards that you can have the students make, and then you can play games with them. You could do matching games. You could do games of, you know, different groups are making different morph mates of the same root, and we can see how many we can come up with all together. There's all sorts of different activities you could create based on this idea of morph mates. But once again, you're teaching them how those words are related to each other, which is important. So that brings us to the end of the content, but I just want to do a quick review that we learned that it's important to actually teach vocabulary, that you want to teach it in context, that you want to make it as interactive and active as possible, that you want to teach morphology, that you want to have them interact and connect it to their lives. As much as you can deepen, you want to make sure that they make associations with it, that they create examples and non-examples. So we learned a lot about all the different ways to do effective vocabulary instruction. So can we have if anybody has a question, have them type it into the chat?
Yeah, please. Thank you so much, Alice. That was great. I know everyone now is trying to figure out like which strategy they're going to use tomorrow. There's just so much great stuff.